Hello, my name is Anna Burrell. I am the CEO and co-founder of Twigs & Co., and we are here to shift how businesses are able to show up and function in society. So that way we can move to a more regenerative circular economy that we need. Part of this is bringing attention to the amazing and wonderful people and organizations that bring us hope on a day-to-day basis, because they are actively doing the work to realize these shifts and facilitate these shifts. Today, I am honored to be sitting with Deborah Brown of Good Business Colorado most recently. She has been activating people, amplifying voices, and gathering businesses and individuals and organizations and people who are passionate about seeing the change that we need to see in the world every day. So Deborah, I'm going to toss it over to you.
My name is Deborah Brown. I'm the executive director of Good Business Colorado. I grew up in Colorado. I was born and raised in Colorado and went to school at the University of Arizona. And that was really a life-changing experience for me. First of all, I ended up there because I didn't get into any of the schools that I applied to, despite being head girl and having a really long list of extracurriculars. I'm not a test taker. And so I refused to have a safety school of CU because I wanted to get out of Dodge, aka the Boulder Bubble, and landed in Tucson, Arizona. As fate would have it, that's where I met not only my husband and life partner, but also my who became my business partner in a class at the U of A. Interestingly enough, the class was called Filling Structural Holes. And it was all about doing, you know, the work between to bring people together to fill in the gaps. And so we ended up starting an organization as a nonprofit called AZ Outreach. And the goal was really to get students outside of the campus, which really in a lot of ways in reflection, this campus was very much also like a bubble with the world of college going on within it, and then the world of the war in Iraq and the people dying in the deserts, trying to migrate for a better life, and everything that I came to learn about the challenges of Arizona off campus. And so the goal was really to get people, for me, was to get people involved in the community. And for my business partner, John, his goal was to create a communication tool for people. And it was before Facebook, and it was called uofacampus.com. And it was really to create community. And that was what brought us together, is that desire to create community. And I think that's been a thread throughout my life and all sorts of ventures that I've embarked on.
So you mentioned creating community being a thread and being one of the desires. Can you speak more as to why? Like, why community?
Yeah. So, you know, this crazy thing called the human experience. I would say there are a couple quotes I've picked up over the years from different people that kind of build that need to really appreciate not only our interdependence on people, but also that it truly takes all kinds, and that there are so many things in the world that I would never possibly be able to do, that yet my very existence depends on somebody being able to do those things. And oftentimes those people that do those things that we so desperately need for our own survival inherently lead to a person who thinks differently, has different beliefs and different values. And so while we are both interdependent on that diversity of views and skill sets that manifest from that, it can be really challenging, especially when there's so much, especially right now, division, and so much, it's so much easier to go to the adversarial, what divides us, what makes us different, versus focusing on what we have in common and our interdependency. But I think, you know, being in a reflective state as I'm approaching my 40th circle around the sun, it really is that just understanding that we really are all interdependent, and that the more ways in which we can connect to the ways that we are connected, then the better off we'll all be.
Very cool. So how did you see that playing into your work of popping the bubble of the campus?
So like for me, you know, growing up in the Boulder bubble, it's like I served food at a homeless shelter, but I never really understood why people had housing insecurity, why people needed to depend on the food through the programs, the social safety networks that were that I was helping volunteer at. As a very privileged person with more than I could ever need to meet my basic needs, that system level policies, the institutionalized inequities, I didn't have that awareness growing up in Boulder. And looking back, I really have utmost respect and admiration because I know so many of my peers that did have that awareness in high school, but that wasn't me. It took me going to Arizona to have a great awakening that was like the culmination of my education and what was going on in the world around me that just really kind of brought into light the structural inequities. And that to be able to address those system level issues, it requires community. People can't do it on their own. It requires collaboration and it requires people working collectively.
Right on. Beautiful answer.
Did I answer it?
Yeah, no, you absolutely, in the most beautiful, like systems acknowledging way of, that was amazing. okay, so you meet your business partner slash husband, you're in
different
Arizona.
Two different people. Okay. That's important. Yeah, my husband, Drew, I met. Also a crazy fortuitous, some things are meant to be. I would consider myself wildly agnostic, but it's instances like that, like the situation of a combination of factors that resulted in me making both my husband, so many coincidences, it makes you wonder, could they really just be coincidences? And then separately, meeting my business partner when I ended up in a class because all the other classes that I wanted to take were full. So which one did you want? You wanted information on meeting my business partner.
It was kind of just wondering about the journey. So how'd you make it back to Colorado?
Great question. So we started AZ Outreach with this idea of really, you know, combining our passions to develop a technology that could be used to bring people together in the flesh to build community in person. And so my business partner went out to Europe and he came back and he said, text messaging is the next disruptive technology. That's the tool that we can use to bring people together in person to make systematic level change. And so we went about trying to raise money for a nonprofit organization, technology organization in Tucson, Arizona, and had absolutely no luck with that. So we decided to try the for-profit route with the idea that we could raise a bit of money from friends and family and try that way. And so I remember we attended a summit on venture capital, and the theme was it can be done in Tucson or can be done in Arizona. And then, you know, at the same time, I've got, you know, there from where I grew up in Colorado, there's this incredible ecosystem to support entrepreneurs and startup companies. And we ended up applying and getting accepted to an accelerator out of CU Boulder, that was at the time the Boulder Innovation Center. And so we ended up relocating the company to Colorado to participate in that incubator program, where we could have a community that was really interested and invested in our support and was, you know, doing a startup's hard enough as it is and doing it in a place where, you know, the theme is it can be done versus in a place where there's an entire ecosystem set up to support entrepreneurs was definitely an attractive proposition. And I, you know, didn't know that I'd ever come back to Colorado, but it turns out it was really great on a personal level too to come home.
Right on. Very cool. So is it still, or was it still A to Z? Like what, after the incubator, what's the journey there?
Right.
We are going to talk more about Good Business Colorado, but building the path is really cool. So,
okay. And I'm sure if I'm jabbing on too much, he'll just tell me. So when we decided that we were not going to be able to get the nonprofit funding to fund AZ Outreach, when we relaunched with the technology platform using primarily text messaging, when we figured out that that was the tool that we wanted to use to be our agent change, we actually called it intextmessage.com. So it was get your information in text message. And actually, if you go to the hockey stadium in Phoenix, Arizona, there's still a jersey hanging from the rafters of intextmessage.com. But when we moved back the company to Colorado, we recruited, there was a wonderful startup group called, it was a Boulder startup group, like a meetup group, which I named specifically because I think meetup has also played an instrumental role in creating community for a wide range of people and ventures. But at that one, we actually met someone who came on board as our CMO. And she was the one who came up with the name Mobilize Us. And so when we kind of relaunched our new platform, we launched as Mobilize Us. And we am very proud to say that Good Business Colorado member took over Mobilize Us. And so the service is still in existence today, serving an incredible amount of nonprofit organizations that are using the technology to mobilize and coordinate and build community.
Oh, very cool. Is there any particular industry or that uses Mobilize Us that can benefit from that?
Yeah, so I think largely the reason that I was moonlighting for the first 12 years we had Mobilize Us is we made a very intentional decision in a way, in a time period when the technology was really being monopolized by large corporations and businesses that were using it for marketing. We really found our niche was in that team communication for sports team was probably our largest application, everything from Little League softball. And one of the most powerful stories that really made me stick with it, because I'm not a techie, I'm actually quite a Luddite. Like my cell phone is probably 7 years old, my computer's going on 8. Like I am not the person who should be running a tech company, but it was the stories like, we had a baseball club in Fort Collins, and I heard from the director one day that they were struggling terribly to have their parents, English as a second language parents, being kept up in the loop of what the teams were doing, even just what color jersey to wear, because they didn't have access to email. Their parents were working all day, like manual labor, and they didn't have email. And so using the text messaging, they were able to make sure the parents knew the information about what color jersey the kids should be wearing. And that seems like such a minute, silly thing in its face. But when you are a kid in elementary school or middle school trying so hard to fit in with your peers and you show up wearing the wrong color jersey because your parents are using the technology that's accessible to them, but that is not the mainstream technology that the club uses. To me, that was a really big impact. So that was like one that was not so obvious. But then, you know, we donated a lot of services to organizations that were literally using the service to coordinate when there was an ICE raid in a community to keep people safe. People coordinating resources after natural disasters. We had a client, Focus Humanitarian, that literally was using the texting service to coordinate volunteers after hurricanes and floods and fires. And so it was very fulfilling with the types of organizations that used our service. Mm-hmm. But it definitely was not the most lucrative application of the technology. And so, you know, we spent the better part of 10 years moonlighting.
So when you say moonlighting, what's that?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of entrepreneurs have done it, whether they know the term or not. Moonlighting is when you have your passion project that you do in the moonlight because you have a day job that pays the bills. And so, you know, moonlighting, that's that idea is like, you know, the realness of the hustle for many entrepreneurs is you do what you got to do during the day to pay the bills, and then you build your company slowly as you can under the moonlight.
That's funny. I'm giggling because I sometimes joke that Uber was my VC for starting Twigs & Co. because I was an Uber driver by night and Twigs & Co. CEO by day.
Yeah, see, so it could be totally flip-flop too. Some people, it's like your day. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So just a quick little popover. So you said that you are not very tech savvy, so it was odd for you to run a tech company, and that was like 12 years of your life. So we're going to pause here for a moment. So just from like a leadership perspective, how did you navigate that?
Yeah, I mean, my business partner was the techie. He was the brain of the technology, and I did everything else. And that's, you know, again, building on that theme of nobody can do everything themselves. We really depend on each other. And he was my business partner. We were in it together, dividing and conquering the work.
Very nice. Very cool. Yeah. Community. There you go. what was the jump from Mobilize Us to Good Business Colorado?
So the last moonlighting gig I took was organizing businesses around the minimum wage ballot initiative. And so for me, it was like an amazing opportunity that came at the convergence of my entrepreneurial journey and my passion for organizing that I've had since apparently even before I knew what that was, you know, in elementary school even. But it really brought together those two universes for the first time. And we won huge on Amendment 70, which raised the minimum wage to 12 by 2020. And we won in a year that was pretty awful by all other standards for a lot of people that were involved with the campaign, including myself. So the day after the 2016 election, I was getting text and emails and calls from business owners saying, you know, what are we going to do next? We want to keep working together. And I think for a lot of people, first of all, it was the first time they've ever used their identity as a business owner to say, hey, big chamber, you don't speak for me. Raising the minimum wage would be good for my business and it'll be good for our economy. And so I think that piece of empowerment around like business owners being emboldened to raise their voice as taking back the narrative of what it means for policy to support small business and who small businesses really are. And I think people found community, especially in a time where people were so besides themselves and devastated by the outcomes of the election on multiple levels. They really needed to feel like they could find their people. And our campaign enabled people to find their people, other business owners who cared so deeply about more than just maximizing profit, that cared about the well-being of their employees and the planet. And at the time, we not yet the planet, that came later, but for the campaign, it was really finding people that cared deeply and shared their view of shared prosperity versus just maximizing profit at all cost. And so small group of us started meeting regularly to talk about what it would look like to form a permanent organization of business owners that are working to build a better Colorado.
How are you finding, couple of different questions with that one. How are you finding that policy is able to support small business?
Yeah, great question. So first of all, you know, there's the saying that if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So I think the first and fundamental piece is for helping business owners navigate the way that the system works and what the points of influence are. And what's really powerful about that is, you know, our membership is broad and diverse, and we don't agree on everything, right? So we can only take formal positions on the things that our members have a pretty strong majority in favor of. And that leaves a lot of space for individual action. And so the way that we kind of feel settled in knowing that we can't be everything to everyone is knowing that we are training business owners to be their own self-advocates. So they can sit at any table that is meaningful in their lives, regardless of whether or not GBC is sitting at that table with them as a formal endorser. They can still occupy that space to make their values real in the world. And so I think that's really important, even beyond the work we do collectively. But again, going back to that collective, you know, what an individual can do is not as powerful as what we can do as now 445 members in 32 counties across the state when we sit at the table together. And so it's both and.
That's really cool. Training business owners to advocate in spaces that they feel is important and that impact them. That's incredible. You're empowering people. That's the, you know, teach a person to fish instead of giving them.
Exactly. And that's why it doesn't matter what the issue is and whether we agree with it or not, they'll take those skills with them no matter what.
Mm-hmm. How are you finding the policy interfacing side of this? So you have your group of business owners together. How are you finding the other side of what goes on in that interaction?
Yeah, that's another great question. So this really was the blind leading the blind. As you know, I was an entrepreneur. I actually didn't have background in policy. All my system work change has been from the outside versus the inside. And so working from the inside was very new to me. Thankfully, you know, after having spent now at this point almost a decade building relationships with the organizations that are member-led, that are really the core organizations in Colorado that are at these policy tables, they really supported our development in the first couple years in terms of helping us. And today still, that's my dog Zona. Today still, we depend really heavily. We work very closely with a broad range of organizations that have been doing the work for decades on policy issues. So for example, for the paid family and medical leave win that we fought so hard for, it was under the leadership of 9to5 Colorado, who've been working on this campaign for decades. When we work on housing, it's the organizations that have been leading the work on housing for decades. So we really rely on the expertise and knowledge of the partner organizations that have been doing the work on the issues that our members prioritize for a long time. And then we have Angelique, is our unicorn, amazing director of policy, who has this incredible gift to take what I think to be incredibly complex issues and make them understandable for people like me who are not policy wonks. And that is such an integral piece of our equation and a key to our success, because really our business owners don't have the time to become the experts in everything. So that's the, you know, the vetting of the policy and to make it understandable and relatable. Our members bring their unique experience and life perspective, their, you know, what they've learned from doing their jobs and the work that they do. And that is also an indispensable part of making policy work. And when you don't have both of those things combined, the technical expertise on the policy and system, along with the real world experience of the businesses that will be impacted by the policy and what it means to them, missing any one of those two is a recipe for disaster. But when you put those two pieces together, I think that's where our success really comes from, is being able to do that. Bill reading is a really challenging thing to do, from my perspective at least. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think a lot of people are aced out of the system before ever having a chance to have a say because of that and other layers of complexity that make the system by design or just unintentionally very inaccessible to the average person and average business owner. So it really provides space and a need for organizations like Good Business Colorado and others that do policy work to bring the voices of grassroots organizations, in our case, business owners, to the places where those decisions are being made and make it accessible to them.
So you mentioned doing work with organizations that have been doing the work and working on these policies for decades. And so I'm wondering, so one of the conversations that I hear echoed quite often, thankfully echoed quite often, is this work of decolonization. You know, our systems, like you mentioned, are built to be very exclusionary. And there are all these internalized things that can come into these relationships and building them. So how have you found navigating the space of having an idea or a thing that matters to the members and then building the relationship in a way that isn't what is commonly referred to as white saviory or doesn't perpetuate the issue of colonialism? How are you finding operating in that manner?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I will definitely own the fact that we haven't got it right yet, but we are deeply, deeply committed to figuring it out. And it's an iterative process where every, you know, year we're trying new things to try and get at that. Removing of barriers, especially from people who've been marginalized by the system, by history of racism and inequities, to be able to get them seats at the table. So for example, one tangible example of something that we've done is we provide honorariums for people to participate in our policy work, because oftentimes the ability for volunteering is a luxury that is often afforded to white people of privilege or more affluent people. And so to get to those people who are moonlighting and have mouths to feed and are starting 20 yards behind to begin with, that's one little tangible thing we can do to try and remove a barrier for them to be able to participate in our policy work, is by making a honorarium accessible to everybody. And we do think it's really important to make those honorariums accessible to everybody, because there's a lot of factors that can influence somebody's ability to volunteer their time. And that's what it's really about. But we just know historically, because of institutionalized racism and inequities, that the folks who can benefit most from making sure they have the ability to get compensation are BIPOC individuals, immigrants, and people who have been marginalized in other ways.
Very cool. All right. So on that note, for anyone listening who wants to get involved with an organization that is actively showing up and facilitating people to actively show up and have these conversations at the table, how is it possible for our listeners to get involved with Good Business Colorado or the work that you're doing, whichever, both probably?
Yeah, thank you. If you are a business owner and you share the values of trying to build a more prosperous, equitable, sustainable community in which maximizing profit is not the end all be all. If you know that our business's success depends on the health and well-being of our employees and our planet, you're our people. We would love to have you join us, and you can do that from our website. If you are not a business owner, but you're a conscientious consumer and you want to support the businesses that are truly vested in your community and that care deeply about their employees and the planet, and then you can join Good Business Colorado's email list and find out, go to our member directory and see the list of businesses that are walking this talk of being triple bottom line minded and really taking care of their employees, the planet, and their community, and give them your business. We have an incredible group of nearly 100 restaurants across the state, every service you could imagine. We have a vision of someday having a membership that's so big and so broad, no matter where you are in Colorado, you could find a business to provide any product or service you need that is a Good Business Colorado member. And so if you go to our website and the business that you love the most, your favorite restaurant, isn't on there, but you know that they care about their employees because you see their kids running around at work, or because you know their employees, or you work for a business that you know cares deeply about you and the environment, encourage them to join Good Business Colorado. For the business owners, we are currently between the legislative session. Right now, our focus is on a lunch and learn series, and it's called Helping Good Businesses Be Better. And that's because, you know, oftentimes, and especially because of the pandemic, it's become increasingly obvious that sometimes the gap between a good business and a bad business It's not some willful desire for a business to take advantage of their employees and destroy the environment, but oftentimes it's really having access to the knowledge and resources to put in place a practice that is better, better for their employees, better for the community, better for the environment. And so the Helping Good Businesses Be Better series is really aimed at walking with business owners, meeting them wherever they are at on their journey, where the end goal is to be better at something, whether it's becoming, increasing your positive environmental impact or decreasing your negative environmental impact, or developing a benefits program for your employees that is realistic for what your cash flow is. There's so much business owners can do, even if they can't afford to provide healthcare, 100% healthcare reimbursements for their employees. There's so much employers can do to support the physical and mental well-being of their employees. All these are the topics that were picked directly by our members. Everything we do is directed by our members. Our members give us our marching orders. And so in this case, they helped us set the 10 topics that we are doing for this Lunch and Learn series. And so I would definitely encourage people to go to our website and check out the list of events. All of the events are hybrid, in-person and virtual, in locations across the state, in partnership with over 35 organizations that serve business owners. There's such a community, an ecosystem that's so invested in support of Colorado businesses. It's such a really unique experience to be able to do business in Colorado, because there is such a strong infrastructure to support business owners. Everything from governmental programs to business organizations and community-led initiatives. So
your website is goodbusinesscolorado.org?
Yes, thank you. And cool. goodbusinesscolorado.org. From there, you can reach everything to learn more about the policy work, joining, finding our members, and learning about the Lunch and Learn series.
Very cool. And I will make sure to also put the link in the show notes so it's easy to access.
Thank you.
So before we wrap up, is there a question that you would like to answer that I have not asked?
You've asked some really good questions, and I literally am wondering. I guess the only other thing I love to talk about with GBC, because I do think it is unique, is our decision-making process, and I kind of alluded to it, but I guess that's the only other thing that I think really fits into that theme of community and like democracy.
Absolutely. I would love to hear about the decision-making process. And then also you mentioned that, you know, this very diverse membership that doesn't always agree on everything. So being a member-led organization, how do you navigate the space of percentages and quorums? And that would be fascinating if you wanted to wax poetic on that for as long as you want, honestly.
Okay. Yeah. So that's exactly what I wanted to talk about. So, you know, from the get-go, we've been very committed. We're founded by values-driven business owners for values-driven business owners. And we're not even 5 years old yet. We'll be 5 years old in October. And so what being a member-led organization looks like has really changed and evolved each year as we've grown as an organization. And so in the beginning, the first year we did policy, it literally was our board of directors that really set the policy agenda. And by year two, we'd implemented a formal process by which every single member voted on the policies that we knew were going to be relevant. And we had to figure out what a sufficient majority was to take a stance on a position. And that is a constant iteration that we are working on every year. So currently we have our annual survey, which every year, every single member gets the survey to identify what are the issues that are most important to them. And when I say we do a survey, I mean, we literally call through our membership. We call every single member to make sure that they really know that we need them to participate and that their voice really matters. And I think it's a very labor intensive, but such an important strategy, because so many people, I think, are used to being paid lip service and, oh, we really care what you think, and surveys galore, like how many people, you know, have the time and headspace to take another survey when there's no promise that that info is going to be leveraged in a way that's going to be any way beneficial to them. So we really, it's really, really important to us that people know that that survey gives us our marching orders. And if they don't, just like if you don't vote, you lose the right to complain in an election. If you don't take the GBC member policy survey, there's lots of other ways to engage and have an influence, but that's how we set our priorities. And then we take those top priorities and we go and we reach out to the organizations that have been leading the work for years and decades and say, what is, you've got your ear to the ground, what's going on? What's feasible in today's political landscape? And maybe when we're feeling a little courageous, we say, what seems unfathomable, but would really move the dial on this issue? And then we have our policy council, which is open to anybody. We don't do the pay to play thing. Anybody who's willing to put in the time to be on the policy council, we welcome. In fact, we again pay people for their time. If you participate in the policy council, you can accept an honorarium. And they do the deep, deep work of vetting the policies, because that saying, the devil's in the details, it is so true. And it's so important, especially because there's not really another values aligned voice for small businesses at most of these tables. It's so important that we are able to insert that perspective of not just small business, because there's plenty of organizations that purport to or actually do represent small businesses at the Capitol, but it's that overlap in the Venn diagram of being a small business owner and caring about more than just maximizing profit, caring about your employees, community, and the environment. That's where we occupy a unique and desperately needed space in making policy. And so those policy council members really do the legwork and put their elbow grease in. And then once we have the policy kind of more roughly formulated and a better understanding of what the specific policy intervention is, then we reach out to our members who took the policy survey and said that they were interested in that issue and say, hey, does this jive with you? What are we missing? How do you want to be involved with making this policy a reality? And so that's another way that people can engage if they don't have time to participate in a policy council with has monthly and during ledge session bi-weekly meetings. There's lots of other ways, and we're always trying to think creatively about, instead of trying to create opportunities where our members have to mold or flex their availability to fit what is accustomed to the legislative process, for example, testifying at the Capitol, which could be an all-day endeavor. In fact, it could be an all-night endeavor, because you're just expected to go and be at the mercy of the bill ahead of you that could take 7 hours or could take 15 minutes. So we're really focusing right now and would love ideas from any of your listeners on how we actually force the policy process to adapt to be more responsive to the needs of everyday people and business owners that are busy running their business, to create spaces for people to participate in the policymaking process in ways that are not yet invented.
Nice, innovation at its finest. So these ideas, what is the best way to get them to you?
Thank you. Yeah, I can be reached directly at Debra@goodbusinessco.org. That's D-E-B-R-A at goodbusinessco.org. Also, if you forget that, you can just go to our website and there's a contact form and our staff list and contact information as well. You know, if it's a policy specific recommendation, Angelique is our, like I said, she's the wizard who does incredible stuff with our policy work. If it's an idea that's related to membership, we have Jason, our director of membership and communications. And you know, I would love to personally hear any ideas that you have for really how we can make our organization better, whether it's on the policy realm or supporting small businesses in being successful.
Wow, fantastic. Thank you for that. I'll make sure to link those in the show notes as well.
Okay.
So with that, thank you very much, Deborah Brown, for your time today. It is inspiring to speak to you and hear what you're up to, both in systems change and the iterative process, and being open to, you know, maybe we didn't nail it this time, but we're gonna figure it out at some point. That takes a resilience and an audacity and an openness and a growth mindset that is really cool to see present in this between policy and business space, in both of these spaces.
Well, thank you, Anna, for doing this. I feel like it's so easy to go to the dark side. And that's why I so appreciate what you are doing to lift up hope and people that are doing good, because it is so easy to go to the dark side, and you can't build community or be creative when you're in that space. So literally, I think this podcast is empowering people to choose light and hope and better versus being paralyzed by all that is bad that we are up against.
Look for the helpers. Always look for the helpers. They're everywhere.
Yeah. Yes. I love that. Always look for the helpers. They're everywhere.
Last thing before we stop recording. Do you have any mantras that you particularly like, or affirmations that you say to help like keep yourself going in those moments?
I can do this.
I can do it. Nice.
I can do this. No. I mean, from a leadership one, the one that I have written on my computer, and this is something that I think go into a level of leadership and what can be really, really challenging, is I trust my team and I can hold them accountable and help them grow, is my leadership one. Because it is for me, honestly, and on a very personal level, that is the thing I struggle with most, is like, how do we create a really incredible work environment where people, first of all, like can prioritize their health and family and life and still uphold a standard of excellence where people are supported and empowered to do their best work and grow. So it's honestly my biggest struggle, and challenge that I am working on. So that's the one that I have written down. I really do love that. Like, it takes all kinds, but that's not an affirmation. It's just something I hold when I get frustrated too, or when I'm trying to relate to people that might be challenging to relate or find common ground to. What other mantras? Oh, this one I picked up from Angelique. When stuff gets rough, she always says, my kid's not being shot at and my village isn't being bombed. And it's just a reminder, you know, same, you know, like we have to recognize and appreciate where the, you know, and for the folks that cannot say that, there are, of whom there are many in the United States and around the world, that's where the work lies. But that mantra does help me remember how much privilege I have, and really how a strong foundation, going back to like our grounding exercise, what a foundation, strong foundation I am standing on.
Oh, fantastic. All right, beautiful words to finish on. With that, thank you very much.
I have a favorite quote too, sorry.
Oh yeah, well, what's that one?
and it's very much longer and more elaborate, but what it comes down to is, you know, if you've come here to save me, speaking to your savior question, if you've come here to save me, you're wasting your time. But if you've come here because you know that our liberation is intertwined, then come, let's walk together.
Oh, that's going on my wall.
Yeah, get it exactly right, because I definitely, that's definitely paraphrased, and the name of the author even eludes me at this moment.
I'll find it. That's really beautiful.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, so speaking to the white savior thing, like, we're saving ourselves as much, if not so more, than anybody else. Let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, oppression takes a toll on the oppressor too.
Yeah, there is no escape from that, the damage that comes from those systems. Unless you dismantle those systems and create functional ones.
Yeah. You're here.